Good evening and welcome to the Disney Discord podcast. I'm one of your hosts, Graham from DLRP Roundup. And tonight I'm joined by Bernardo. Hello, Bernardo, are you there?
Yes, I am. Thank you very much, Graham. How are you? How is Christmas?
Oh, it was fantastic. It was fantastic. And what we got a present. We got an early present, which is
You
the
got an
subject.
awesome present. An awesome present from the big you.
The big U delivered a present for everyone just before Christmas. So, to recap, we have quite a lot of news, and I know we call this the Disney Discord podcast. However, we absolutely do not discriminate, and you can talk about any park in the world that you like. It makes no difference. You can talk on the Discord about any park you like. Nobody's bothered. Tonight, we are going to talk almost exclusively on Universal. There's a couple of things happening at Disney, and we'll cover them off, but they're not terrible. I mean, we didn't expect. We shut down for Christmas. We expected no news on the theme park front until about the 14th of January. And somehow, days before Christmas, the world blew up. Bernardo, do you want to tell us what happened in the theme park world on December 20th?
Yeah, sure. So, Orlando Park Stopper, Alicia Stella, an amazing YouTuber and I mean, actually journalist, theme park journalist. She had a bombshell news story regarding Universal destinations and experiences and how they were planning a UK-based Universal theme park resort. So that story got out and a lot of people start to lose their minds. Oh my God, is Universal coming to Europe once again and finally? And some hours later, me and Ali, we joined forces and released a first look at a concept art, which is an older concept art, but still a first look at a possibility for a theme park in the UK. And the next day or 2 days later, Universal came out and said that yes, the project is real. They have bought the land for the theme park, and they are starting feasibility studies for that potential theme park and resort at the Bedford site, just an hour and a half, I think, from the center of London. So super exciting stuff.
So this happened in the space. I mean, it was uncovered and 12 hours later we had confirmation. Now this is down to two things. Number one, Universal parks, resorts, entertainment, whatever, really,
The
really want they
destinations and experiences.
yeah they were desperate to shut down their operation for Christmas. They were absolutely desperate to shut down the operation and be like, that's us done for Christmas. We have nothing more to contribute. And then this got uncovered. I believe this was probably planned for early in the new year. They were going to talk about this early in the new year. They got absolutely sidetracked and they got forced to kind of confirm it early. The second thing that happened here is the British press have nothing to report on during this period. So once you get into Christmas, nothing happens in the UK. Parliament is shut, so there's no more political debate. Nothing big happens, so there's nothing for these people to be doing. They have nothing of any interest to be bothered about. So effectively, the press had nothing to report on. So the idea there was a multi-billion-dollar resort getting plonked down in Bedford became that exciting to the UK press. There was no way that Universal could ever possibly have held off from confirming or deconfirming the events. So this was a fantastically bad moment for Universal for this to drop because the UK press had nothing better to be doing. And instantly the BBC, the Daily Mail, world round organisations basically causing trouble had nothing better to do than cause Universal trouble.
And even Sky News, who is owned by Comcast, so
Yeah.
that
Their own parent company was a bit like, yeah, we're going to have to come after you now because there's blood in the water. The sharks are on their way. If you think Jaws was a big thing, it's coming. So, before we get really into this, let's talk about what Universal's doing worldwide. So right now, Universal's in the process of opening Epic Universe in Orlando, which is going to be Universal's third park in Orlando. It's going to be its biggest. It's going to be its best. It's going to be its Universal operating at full power. It is probably the first park where they've been able to say they're at full power from learning from the Universal Studios they've built around the world, and learns from Island's Adventure and having a bit of time in the industry, Epic Universe certainly seems to be shaping up to be, you know, a top tier park. This is a Mickey Mouse. It's designed as a Mickey Mouse killer. It's a Magic Kingdom slayer. It is the park that we're all supposed to. I mean, it's called Epic Universe.
When there's epic in the name, you know it's gonna be epic. So
they've certainly, you know, they're not letting much out about Epic Universe. But the interesting thing is we get to see it through BioReconstruct, and we get to see the progress, and we get to track that, and we can tell that the lands and some of the exciting attractions that are going to be there, the Universal Monsters, the How to Train Your Dragon, when you've got Harry Potter, these are all top tier platforms and IPs that they're deploying. They're throwing everything at this. Then completely out the left side of the field, is it Universal Texas? I don't think it actually has a name, does it? It's like Universal Kid Resort Texas or something. Flung on the table.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So it was announced early January of this year, in the middle of nowhere. So yeah, there was that.
Yeah, it was just a case of, oh, we were going to do a Universal Kids Park. You know, people are like, wow, that's a whole new novel concept. And calling it Universal Kids takes shot at Disney, because it's effectively saying, oh, you were going to build a Texas park, but actually we're going to build a kids park in Texas. Ha ha.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and then they've got the universal attractions they're building. What is it? Universal Regions or Horror Night or Regional? I can't remember what they called it, but you know where they're doing the
horror Unleashed, I think.
Horror Unleashed, yeah.
So
So they've got their micro. So they're definitely, you know, Universal are definitely spending the money to try and get. To try and get more asset in the ground. So they've clearly looked at things. So this is where it's quite interesting. Universal itself was bought by Comcast. And Comcast have obviously looked at what they have as assets. Now, what Comcast commonly do is they have pipes in the ground, and these pipes usually serve internet and utilities. Comcast are quite good at owning studios where others develop things. Comcast are a very flexible company. So, for example, they own Sky in the UK. That is probably the second major broadcaster in the UK. But again, it's all licensed independently. Sky is, you know, run as its own thing. It's not run as Comcast. They're very, very good at licensing. They're very, very good at using assets wisely. And they're definitely someone as a company who prefers having hard assets. So that's. They like having the Sky Studios, they like having theme parks, they like having broadband and phone lines, because these are assets that they can, you know, they don't disappear. Comcast mm-hmm. owning movie studios definitely have erred on the side of they like hard product, meaning things in the ground, versus just having movie releases and relying on cinema. And, you know, they're not bad at cinema either. So,
yeah. They own a lot of stuff.
Stuff. They like stuff. That's why this is why it's important. So they like stuff. And they really like stuff, as shown by their building it. And they're interested now. The other piece, you want to lead us to the latest on PortAventura, possibly Universal's PortAventura in the future. What's the latest we've seen there?
Yeah, so, you know, this has been a bit of a two-side story, because, you know, if you go to the forums and inside Universal, it's always been a bit like one side versus the other, which I don't fully comprehend, but I kind of do. So pretty much what I just wanted to say that. But lately there's been some stuff happening in PortAventura as well. And one of the sad stuffs is that Paige Thompson, the president of New Ventures Universal, was seen walking with the director of PortAventura in late November, in the park, just the two buddies just walking around. And then I got confirmation that it was a huge delegation of people from Comcast and Universal staying in the resort. including one Mike. And if we see who leads Comcast, I mean, the president of Comcast is called Mike Kanahaw. I'm not sure how to pronounce his name. But if the president of Comcast is staying in Port Aventura, I mean, something has to be happening with that Spanish resort. It couldn't just be some licensing agreements or visiting a theme park to gain, you know, a new perspective on European theme parks. It has to be something more. And yeah. we could come back to this later on, but I think we could be looking at a two resort plan by Comcast, by Universal, for the European continent. And that would be the most exciting thing we've seen in, like, what, 30 years since Disney settled in Europe? So, yeah, there's definitely something happening there. I cannot give you a date. I cannot give you a confirmation. I truly can't. I wish I could. But I wouldn't put Port Aventura behind them. Because of these UK news, so there's definitely something being planned for Spain.
This is why it's interesting. Okay.
Yeah.
And this is where we need to come down back to a dose of reality. Okay. So, Universal Great Britain, Universal Studios Great Britain, or Parks Great Britain, whatever. Interestingly, this is not the first time Universal have proposed this. In the past, they proposed Universal London City or Universal City London, something like that. And they got quite far along in the proposal, and they played the British government at the time off against the French government at the time. And there was a whole fight between whether Universal would be opening a Universal Studios or Universal City in London, or they'd be opening it 40 miles south of Disneyland Paris, or west, southwest of Disneyland Paris in France. And they successfully, Universal Studios successfully bid two governments off against each other, which gave them preferential rights to develop faster, to get, you know, land use regrading, to do things that otherwise are quite difficult. And they've done that in the past. They ended up building neither. But they managed to play two governments off against each other.
They went for Port Aventura. That was their plan B.
Yeah, that was plan B, but it wasn't, you know, there wasn't their London plan or their French plan, where they were gonna take on Euro Disney completely. And this was their great plot. And yeah, you're right, they eventually bought, you know, it was, I think they bought, I want to say 40% or something of the shares of Port Aventura, and then made it Universal Mediterranean, and that was a sort of stopgap measure back then. But it came down to they knew how to play these governments off against each other. And I do worry that possibly Universal Great Britain might be getting used as a sort of leverage for, you know, if Port Aventura, there's not many companies will buy a full theme park. And if they've started knocking the price up, or they've started to, you know, demand a bit more, that actually Universal hasn't went, well, do you know what, if you're going to put the price up that much, we might as well build our own in London. You know, we prefer London. London would be, you know, look at all this development. So I do worry that Universal... Mm-hmm. Great Britain
is just
only
a plot.
Exists. Yeah. Now, people say, but they've bought the land and such, but the land wasn't, I mean, as much as everybody argues the land is worth thousands, it actually isn't, not in the grand scheme of Universal operate, not in the sense that they can hold it as an asset at the value they buy it for and probably sell it for the same value they bought it for. I mean, it's a brownfield site that has had planning knocked back for house, and it's had planning knocked back for a business park. It's had planning knocked back for leisure parks. Like, as a site, if Universal don't buy it, there's not exactly, you know, it didn't exactly have a future that they're fighting for. They're not one of a few people desperate for this piece of land to say, you know, if we don't get it, this isn't in central London. This isn't in a high density population area. It is nearby high-density population areas, but it's not a high-density population area. Nobody's nobody's looked at it and thought, you know, if we need to fight Universal to get this piece of land, it's scrub land otherwise. And I do worry.
I mean, it wouldn't be the first time Universal does something like that. When Epic Universe was starting, you know, development, they wanted to keep everything very quiet and secret. So one of the ways they did that was scrape off the dust from old plans for a Universal South Korea and said, oh, we're building this again. So look at this and don't look at what we're planning for Epic Universe. So this happened in like 2015 or something. So I wouldn't completely put it past behind them, but I do not think this is the case here. I mean, it could be, it could very well be, but I don't think it is.
I'm going to get the last negative bit out before, because I want to get the negative out so that I can focus on just being really excited. As a theme park fan, I'm really excited. As a political hobbyist in the UK, what I absolutely know is that there will be some protected species of bat, bird, water vole, or tree that is on that site. And I guarantee, now this is one of the problems with planning in this country. Planning in this country is world leading in transparency and access. So world leading just means that literally anyone, I mean anyone in the world, can go into Bedford Council's planning, and you can view plans that are being submitted, and you can view them usually within about 48 hours of them being submitted to the council. It really depends on how quickly they upload them at the planning site, but very, very quickly. This isn't going to be like Epic Universe where, you know, the town authority, the Orlando town authority or city authority they're like, oh, we're part of the secret, we're not going to ruin the surprise. No. You're in the UK now. You're going to know where the light fixtures and fittings are in the building. There's going to be no hidden surprise attractions. There's going to be no secrets. You're going to know the exact colour of the fence for the car park. Like, let me be clear. Planning in the UK awesome, leaves nothing. Yeah. There's nothing going to be left to the imagination. Now, there are two ways that you can get planning in the UK. And this is where we go on to the other London development, the Paramount Park, which was originally the London Paramount Experience and then became the London Resort, which I do need to inform everybody that after about 10 years of going on about it, never actually happened. And is apparently coming back this year, but given that there's 3 days left of this year, I don't think we're going to see anything more from them. they went one route. And the route they took was by petitioning the government, and they got named I can't remember the exact name, but it's a national investment priority, which meant that they were one of the most important things happening in the country, and didn't have to apply for local planning permission, and therefore could just build the resort because it was deemed so strategically important.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it turned out that none of the environmental agencies, the planning authority, the traffic authority, the water board, or anybody like that took any notice of the government, and instead just petitioned them on every single line that they said that they were not allowed to petition them on. They took them to the High Court and ended up having to follow the planning process anyway. So it turns out, even being named a strategically national important piece of infrastructure in this country means nothing. And if anybody wants to argue with me on that, let me just point to the fact that Heathrow is one of the busiest airports in the world and could conceivably be the busiest in the world if it had a third runway. Every government agrees they should build a third Heathrow runway. There are plans for a third Heathrow runway. There is the money for a third Heathrow runway from private company. There's no third Heathrow runway. This has been going on for 30 years. High Speed 2 is a rapid transit train thing. It's not quite as fast as any other countries, but it's a fast one. And it's supposed to connect, you know, the south all the way up to the north. It has passed every level in Parliament. It got almost unanimous support. Everybody really thought it was a good idea, apart from the people living in the towns and anybody who was going to be inconvenienced by additional train noise. It got stopped at one point because there was a badger species on the site. So, I mean, High Speed 2, when we're talking about Universal Great Britain, we're talking let's call it upper bounds, let's call it, let's go wild and say it's a £10 billion pound investment. Well, High Speed 2 is a £250 billion pound investment, so that's 25 times the value, and it's been stopped about 100 times. So let me just be clear, the idea that, oh, the UK will not turn down this money, let me be clear today. If the UK government and the UK councils can get in the road of something, they absolutely, without any doubt, will manoeuvre themselves in front of it. There will be a protected badger. Now, it's all about how Universal deal with these badgers. Now, personally, I would just say you peacefully relocated them somewhere else. It doesn't really matter if you drop them in the sea. But we're going to hear about protected species. Now, everybody says, you know, the residents are all happy and everything. I need to remind you to call a planning decision and you only need five residents to be upset. They will find five residents that are upset in Bedford. Only five, that's it. You only need five. So,
oh, wow.
So, A, I don't think we're going to see Universal try to become a strategically national, you know, important project, because it seems to just upset absolutely everyone and draw them out the woodwork. So they're probably... From what I've read of their letters, they say they're looking forward to working together with the Bedford Council. They actually say that in their letter, that they're looking forward to working with, you know, the Bedford Borough Council and the Mayor of Bedford Borough, which tells me that they intend to follow the local planning route rather than the national planning route. This is quite important, and here's why I think that it might be the better option for them. The local planning route requires them to submit what's called a pre-application. A pre-application should just be called a big notice that everybody tuts and scoffs at, so that, oh, I can't believe this is happening. But the interesting thing about pre-application is, if you are a statutory body, so if you're a bird preservation society, or you're the sewage company, or you're the water board, or you're the electricity company, or anybody who has any say and can potentially block this, you are required to bring that forward at pre-application, meaning that you have to put all your cards on the table first. Now, this takes a bit of time. I think they get about 6 months to do it, maybe nine. But basically means that when Universal submit their plan, they can already know what all the big objections are going to be, so they can already have tried to work around them. That's quite important for Universal, because there will be a lot of objections. Everybody tells me there will. I mean, you cannot build a McDonald's restaurant in a street in the UK without attracting 300 complaints. The idea that a worldwide sculpt resort is getting built. Like, you build a Starbucks with the wrong paint colour on the front and it gets blocked. Like, there's no way that Universal are getting in here without five objections. So they're probably going to get all that pulled out first, then they're going to put in their application, and that's a master plan. After they're a master plan, they have to do like effectively a phase plan. So it's like, you can build a theme park, the hotels, what are you going to do for infrastructure, what are you going to do for this, that, and the next thing. There's two rail stations, they're both fairly dismal. Rail in the UK is fairly dismal. I'm very sorry to the people that keep telling me there's great train links. There's no great train service in the UK. Total myth. Trains are the number one complained about transport in the UK. They're as unreliable as it comes. You, quite frankly, might turn up to the train station and be told you're getting on a rail replacement service, which is, you know, for anybody who's not experienced, that's a bus. You're getting on a bus. Being 40 minutes from Luton Airport, which is a big airport actually in London, one of the big five. Very nice airport, connected by EasyJet and everything. Very, very good for transport to European destinations. Totally appreciate that. However, it is connected by the M1. The M1 is a 40-minute drive if you're travelling it at, you know, 1 o'clock in the morning, and or 2 a.m. is a 40-minute drive. If you're travelling that at 9 a.m. and your flight got in at 8 a.m., yeah, it's probably about a 2.5-hour drive. So, I mean, realistically, you could get a flight to France quicker. You could get to Port Aventura probably quicker than you could get along the M1. So again, anybody suggesting there's a 40-minute motorway between Luton Airport and this resort have obviously never visited the UK or seen the infrastructure problems that we actually have here. So the idea this is some ideal location that everybody can get to really easily, I'm not entirely sure it's based on any, you know, I think that's Americans telling people that live in the UK that they have great infrastructure. On paper, we do. In practicality, you'll probably find UK infrastructure outside London or Edinburgh is probably quite poor. So let me put all that aside and let us now be positive, because despite the fact we have a planning system that seems to favour people who hate, you know, development, and we have a transport system apparently designed by people who really, really don't use it. Other than that, it's probably quite a good idea.
Well, yeah.
You didn't expect it to be that in depth, did you?
No, not really. okay. So
let me go into the benefits then. The benefits here, British people are one of Orlando's largest visitor segments to Universal Orlando. And this has been the case. Wait, I mean, some people say it's because of Harry Potter, but it's really not. Like, British people have always kind of visited Universal Studios when they go to Orlando. Typically, a British holiday to America, it's an 8-hour flight, so generally 10 days to 14 days. Visiting the four Disney parks is possibly, you know, it's maybe not enough to satiate them, so a lot of people would tack on the Universal ticket. For people who don't know, if you buy a ticket to Disney in the UK, you pay a flat fee for 14 days access, and it's much lower than you'd pay if you were an American, for example. So it's usually quite a good deal to visit for the 14 days. So Universal only sell to UK people. I mean, it's not, you don't get like 2-day tickets or anything. You get 14 day tickets. So, you know, for an adult going to Florida for 2 weeks, it's currently £537 for a ticket to go to Disney. So, I mean, I don't know what that is in dollars. Hang on, I'll quickly convert it. So that's $680, and that's 14 days unlimited access to all the parks.
Oh, wow.
Do you know what?
Yeah, that's a great price, gosh. Yeah. I might have to use a VPN next time.
Well, you just shout to me and I'll give you it. So to compare that, so the price for Universal just now, if you were going to Universal in Orlando, the park ticket price, and this gets you into Universal City Walk, Universal Studios, Universal's Island Adventure, and Volcano Bay. So it's all of them. And the UK is selling that for £347, which is $444 for 14 days.
Oh, cool. Wait, for 14 days for Universal?
Yeah, it's a 14-day ticket.
Do they have... It's still 14 days for Universal? Wow, I didn't know that.
Yeah, so this is, I mean, Universal have always sold tickets in the UK, like, well, if you're coming anyway and you're getting a 14-day Disney ticket, you'd be as well. I mean, the difference in price between a 7-day Universal ticket and a 14-day Universal ticket is £10, or, like, $15.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
Like, it's got a price difference just to say it does. It doesn't... So this is one of the things that are kind of interesting. Because UK guests have been visiting Universal Studios so much anyway... You know, Universal, see, they've got an audience in the UK that are quite loyal to them. And, you know, that broke ahead when they built Harry Potter, and their UK visitor mix is quite high, which, you know, they've obviously looked at that and thought, these guests. And what you'll notice is UK guests are now visiting the US less and less. The currency, I mean, in 2000, the dollar was 2-1 with the dollar, so 2-1 with the pound, sorry. So you were talking for £1,000 British money, you were going to the US with $2,000. It was, you know, you doubled your money when you went across there. That has just slipped and slipped and slipped for years and years. And I think the British market are probably visiting the US less and less. I'd imagine the same is true of the euro as well. Although it was never quite as strong as 2-1, it effectively the euro's. And I think that Universal have now got to think, well, if these guests are, you know, Universal's always been a more diverse park than Disney, which is predominantly Americans. Universal have suddenly got to say, well, if they're not coming to the US, we have to go to them. And I think you're right, a two-pronged approach having Universal's Port Aventura for those who want sunny climates and, you know, the warmth, and then certainly a well connected resort in the UK might be enough to kind of entice people in.
Yeah, and I think they would serve two very different markets, because we can't forget that Europeans need a passport to get into the UK. And that does make, you know, travel just a small step more difficult. And that may just be it for a European traveler to choose to go to Port Aventura and not to the UK. I mean, I think I saw the statistics, and I think French people, like half, don't have a passport, or 60% or something. It's a very big number. It's a big big quantity. Yeah, it's a lot of people. And I think that, you know, the UK, British people have more, you know, Universal has more brand, there's more people that know the Universal brand in the UK. Yeah, exactly. In the UK than any other European country. I think that's it. I don't think
translate. You know, Universal's output is predominantly in English. So, I mean, the UK is an English speaking country. The other thing I don't think a lot of people realize is the US border control is a lot more tougher on Asian and Eastern European countries now. So you're talking your Bulgaria, your Latvia, your Poland, your India, your Pakistan. Now, interestingly, the UK isn't. As much as the UK's brigaded as being, you know, xenophobic almost, the interesting thing is all those countries are very welcome in the UK, and we have quite diverse Indian and Pakistani communities within the UK.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that probably opens new markets to Universal in the sense that they can ground it in the UK but also expand it at the same time, especially if you consider that Comcast owns Sky. And Sky is a huge broadcaster in the UK, one of the largest, and they can effectively just, you know, promote their own product.
Just like Disney does in the US with ABC and all those shows.
The other thing we have to take into consideration, Spain has theme parks. So Spain, for example, has Port Aventura. It has you know, smaller parks like Terramitica. We've spoken about Terramitica before. But they have theme parks. France has Disneyland and it has Parc Asterix, and then we've got Efteling. We've got there's no shortage of theme parks in Europe if you go into Europe. However, the UK has a lot of very small theme parks. So Thorpe Park and Alton Towers are very small parks, both owned by Merlin. Blackpool Pleasure Beach is probably the largest independent one, but Blackpool Pleasure Beach could fit in some of the car parks off the Floridian theme parks. Like, Blackpool Pleasure Beach, you need to zoom in on a map sometime. I mean, it's literally built in it's tiny. Like, Universal's, in fact, this is your next challenge. Universal's parking structure in Orlando, I believe, is probably about the same size as Blackpool Pleasure Beach.
Oh, wow.
just to put in, that's awesome. You know, and Blackpool Pleasure Beach is probably the busiest theme park in the UK. So you've got these fantastic sort of contradictions where we have theme parks, but they're not that well attended. I think the peak was about 5.5 million guests. So you haven't got your sort of 10 million plus visitors that they're used to in Orlando. So they're going to have to build a big resort for that. The other thing is the UK needs some good hotel options. It needs some good conference options. It needs some good, you know, like, this will do quite well for corporate UK in the sense that there's very few places they can kind of take, you know, when they do their away days and stuff. Like, it's quite popular in the US. There's not really that in the UK. Like, Alton Towers is there, but Alton Towers, you know, is a very good park for roller coasters, but it's quite poorly themed. It's not on the scale of a US park, so it's a different market. Mm-hmm. They're definitely doing a different thing. I don't think Alton Towers will suffer from this. Like, I don't think this is a death blow to Maryland or anything. I think they know that it's a very different offering. And Alton Towers is a very, you know, it can be quite a cheap resort to visit. And then famously, I mean, Alton Towers owner, Marilyn Tussaud, which merged with the Tussaud Company, which, you know, does all the waxworks and stuff, it actually owned Port Venture and sold it to Universal. How yeah, these things come round in a circle. you know, they, and I don't know if they've done that tactically to keep Universal possibly out of the UK. Yeah, like, we'll sell it off cheap across in Spain, stay out our, you know, our patch. So,
yeah.
You've got about that. The second thing, now, I know a lot of people disagree with this, and I'm sorry in advance that I'm just going to kind of run over the top of that, but, I mean, the UK's home of Harry Potter. J.K. Rowling was born in Edinburgh. She's, you know, a national author in the UK. She was celebrated as, I think, the only private contribution to the 2012 Olympics, the world opening show. Universal are obviously the operator of Harry Potter in most of their theme parks. I'm told they don't operate it in Singapore, but they do operate in every single other park they own. They are building a third Harry Potter land in Orlando. So you've got one in, you know, you've got one in Studios, you've got one in Adventure, and you're now going to have one in Universe. Mm-hmm. So the, yep. Harry Potter is, other than Jurassic Park, I don't think they've got any other IPs that are in all three parks. Is Jurassic Park in Epic Universe? I think it is.
No. Jurassic Park isn't even on Studios, though, is it? I don't think Jurassic Park is on.
Oh, no, it's not, actually. Do you know what? I'm misremembering. It's the Mummy. I'm thinking it's the same It's the same sort of. No, but you're right. They've got it in Islands Adventure. They do have it. They do not have it in Universal Studios. So you've got, so there you go, you've got one IP that spans other parks.
Yeah, it's their biggest theme park IP, without any question, yeah.
And then I think you were saying before we came on the show, you know, if there was a possibility of Warner Brothers blocking it, Warner Brothers have no money just now, like...
Yeah.
You know, and then...
Warner Brothers is not in a good situation right now.
No. Not just that. I mean, Universal already licenses Harry Potter. They've already kind of worked that out. They produce and publish, you know, a lot of the theme park goods of that. They've negotiated a three-way deal with Warner Brothers, J.K. Rowling, and obviously Universal. They know how to do it, and I don't think that it would be beyond them to negotiate a deal that was equitable for all the partners. And, you know, they all get a cut of the merchandise, they all get a cut of the revenue, they all get a cut, you know, like, not hard.
I mean, that was just one of the rumors, is that plans did not include Harry Potter. Another rumor says...
I think there's another a good possibility.
Go ahead.
No, you go ahead.
No, I was just going to say that another rumor says that there won't be any clone attractions from US-based theme parks, but they could use the same IPs that are used in those attractions. So perhaps they could build a Jurassic World roller coaster, but in a different way to that of Velocicoaster. So say... something like a Hagrid's, but, you know, themed to Jurassic World or Jurassic Park. They can definitely use the same IPs in new and different and exciting ways. So,
here's my thought. Number one, Universal clones attractions to almost every park it does. So, Nintendo World is its other, like, mega property just now, and it's coming to all its resorts. And it's basically in every situation, it's just a clone of what already came before. And secondly, the UK has a different climate to almost every other park that they operate. So I think that it's probably true you're not getting any cloned attractions in the similar sort of sense. But I think you're going to see, much in the same way the Back to the Future ride changed to The Simpsons, and other than a re-theme, it's the same ride. In the same way that Spider-Man and Transformers are almost the same ride and exist, you know, less than a mile apart in Islands Adventure and Universal Studios, they get a lot of hate for their screen rides. The reason they build a lot of screen rides is it's very easy to build them and re-theme them to different and new IPs.
Yeah.
you know, Minions Mayhem, Shrek 4D, that sort of nonsense. I can't see them. I cannot see a world where Universal think the UK, bearing in mind it's only 65 million people live in the UK, and 300 million in Europe, I suppose. But I do not think this is where, when compared to, you know, Bedford, England, let's just keep that on the radar here. Bedford in England is somehow going to be a greater pool than Osaka in Japan, Singapore, Beijing, Orlando, and Los Angeles. Like, I don't think that, I don't think they're holding back in Orlando and Epic Universe saying, no, we're going to keep the big guns for Bedford. Like, I just, that's probably not how the conversation's going. I think the reality is you're probably getting more indoor attractions and probably more undercover, which makes a lot of sense given the climate.
I think if they were to clone any attractions or even lands, I think they would take a lot from Beijing. Because Beijing has, out of all their theme parks, I think it has the most similar weather to that of Bedford or London. You know, it rains like 100 days out of the year. I think London is a little bit more, but yeah, it snows during the winter. Yeah. So there's a lot of capacity indoors there. I mean, they have an entire Kung Fu Panda or DreamWorks Land inside a huge pavilion. So, correct. You know, they would definitely learn a lot from Beijing and how they developed their theme park. And I think I could definitely see some clone attractions from that park because, you know, it's on the other side of the world. How many British people are going to Universal Studios Beijing or French people or Spanish people? Yeah. I mean, the percentage must be so low they wouldn't even consider not doing it. So
I think it's probably we're not cloning anything from Epic Universe. So the other, you know, Universal have a deep portfolio. How to Train Your Dragon, Kung Fu Panda, Shrek, Minions, which
Back
is
Back to the Future. We need a Back to the Future land. Please, just do it.
That's it. The other thing is Paramount. You know, Paramount were trying to open the park. It's well known that Paramount want to get physical attractions built, and Paramount will partner with just about anybody to do that right now. So, you know, that puts on the table. Paramount puts on the table some big IPs as well. You know, as much as Star Trek's a huge IP for Paramount, they've got the, you know, there's stuff that can be flung out there.
Yeah. Definitely.
You know, there's other things they can do. Let's talk about the UK more in general. So the UK is quite good for annual passes, I believe, for Alton Towers and Thorpe Park. They have quite a strong contingent of annual passers, so I think they'll get their base level. I think you're going to see Harry Potter. I cannot see a world where Harry Potter doesn't exist. The UK is a bit colder than most countries, so it is going to be a wee bit more inside. But the UK currently doesn't have anywhere that's year-round, so all the theme parks in the UK, although they have extended seasons, they don't have year-round operation. So I can't imagine Universal's coming in doing 9 months of the year. I think they're probably going to do 12-month operation. There's no park in the UK does nightly entertainment, so you know how they light up the Hogwarts castle and they do a projection show and fountain show and stuff. There's nothing like that in the UK, so that's brand new to the UK.
Yeah.
Things like Halloween Horror Nights, although there's little things and there's, you know, especially Christmas things happen in the UK, none of them are very professional, none of them are well done. I think Universal could make an absolute steal if they were running a genuinely good Christmas and Halloween sort of event space.
I may be wrong, but I think the UK there will be a huge market for Universal, like something horror unleashed, like Las Vegas experience or something. I think that could be very well, you know, located like in London, like, you know, the Shrek experience that's owned by Merlin. Mm-hmm. The Citadel of London. I think something like that would, you know, would make real money.
Yeah,
just
definitely.
A horror unleashed throughout all year long. That would be, you know, making some bank.
No, you're absolutely right. Here's the downside, though. The UK doesn't operate like, I mean, Universal operates in most countries operating on a sort of two-tier process, or three-tier process, I should say. So Universal sort of sells you your base ticket, and that's your access to the parks and your access to the rides. They then sell the Express Pass, and while it's cheaper than some other options, it is quite a premium option for skipping the queues. Mm-hmm. And then thirdly, they offer a really premium sort of experience to people who stay in their partner or like the Universal hotels.
Yeah.
One park in the UK for UK visitors, you're going to struggle to sell them on like the hotel package. Like, people are not staying there for weeks at a time. It's going to be a day or two at a time. And secondly, UK citizens, and you'll know this if you're British or if you've been to a British theme park and seen British people, it does not matter the queue is 4 hours long. People would rather wait in a 4 hour queue. We're very good at queuing in the UK. People will not buy Express Pass. That's just not going to be a thing. Like, it is I get that it will be a thing. I get they will be able to sell some of it, but they're not going to. I mean, Americans are sort of conditioned into upcharge and are conditioned into, you know, pay this fee and you can skip this queue. That it just goes against the whole British sense of fairness, equity, mm-hmm. and queuing. So I do hope they've factored that in and they're not hoping on Express Pass being a huge contributor to net income, because it won't be.
Yeah.
So you've got that.
I mean, yeah.
There's going to be, but there's also no car park in the UK that currently does a daily parade either. I was looking that up.
Really?
Yeah, so that's a whole new thing that they can.
There's a lot to explore and to be the first ones to do. There's, no, it's a completely untapped market. That yeah. level of a theme park, and I think I truly think it could work rather well in the UK for, you know, British people.
Huge slot of land as well. Have you seen there was a Twitter, hang on, I want to credit them because this was really good. I really enjoyed this earlier on today. I think
you're talking about Tommy Hawkins.
Is this the guy that does the comparisons between what fits and what doesn't? I've got to tell I mean I don't know if he's done it right or not. It's Tommy Hawkins. It is. So, I mean, on mm-hmm. this, I just want to run through this because everybody needs to hear. So if you haven't seen this, his handle is at Tommy Hawkins. And he's looked at the plot of land and said, you know, here's what you could fit. I'm not entirely sure they're all accurate because they all meet a different scale, but I think he's done it mostly accurate. Islands of Adventure could fit about 3 times. Universal Studios Beijing could fit about twice.
Yeah.
Epic Universe could fit about 2.5, maybe 3 if you've really done it. You could fit the entire Californian Disneyland Resort. I'm being serious here. This is serious stuff here. Universal Florida could fit probably about 4 times. Port Aventura could fit. This is a tough one. Port Aventura could probably fit about 1.5, but Port Aventura is huge.
Yeah, Port Aventura uses a lot of land that they, you know, it's not a compact park. They have lots of land, so they don't really care.
Thorpe Park could fit about 3 or 4 times in, and Efteling could fit about twice. And again, Efteling's a big empty space. So the idea that, you know, this could be a small like Texas style thing. Seems unlikely. It seems like if they're going to do it, they're going to do it big. It does make the sort of failed analogy that it's going to be centered around that daft rail line. I would roll my eyes at that. But anyway. I would roll my eyes at that. If this is all relying on Network Rail and British Rail, I've got to tell you that I've got some things to sell you. But yeah, I mean, you can fit, this is a huge piece of land, but the UK is, I mean, the UK famously, I live in Scotland, and Scotland's only actually 5% populated, which means that 95% of the country is just open field somewhere. So the fact that there's space available isn't a surprise. It's very exciting. So we've now got Universal Great Britain on the cards. We've got Universal Port Aventura on the cards potentially, and it's gonna be very exciting to see what gets said next. Is there anything we've not covered?
I don't think so. I mean, they didn't talk about the concept art. So, I mean, could go over that. I don't think it's really worth it because I don't think anything in this concept art will come to fruition.
Your other problem is it doesn't really show anything.
Yeah, you can make some stuff out, but
hang on, I'm gonna load it. So the Main Street News, which is of course Bernardo, shared this, and what we can see from it. So it is worth.
I mean, you see the whole the coaster at the back. You see the train link. I'm talking about the theme park itself. You see the dueling coaster out of from Epic Universe. Mm-hmm. You see the Jurassic World land from Beijing. You see what I think? It's the Kung Fu Panda, also from Beijing. And then you see a major hotel at the entrance. Again, Beijing. And a smaller city walk at the entrance, something like Disney Village from Paris. And then you have the train station that gets you right at the entrance.
What's it look like? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 lands, maybe it looks like, which is quite large.
Yeah, 6, 7 lands, yeah, I think so.
Yeah, 6, 7 lands. It's definitely got some significant water features, and I think the globe in the middle is supposed to be maybe a projection, maybe not.
I'm not really sure.
I'm not entirely sure there. And then the thing that threw me about this artwork, and I know it means absolutely nothing, it probably means nothing. What is the water? Have you got it in front of you just now?
Yeah.
Yeah. What is the water feature at the back right? So it's on the sort of arterial road on the way in. There's like a little...
The back right?
Yeah, do you see like the little water feature on the motorway?
Oh yeah, there's like a little fountain.
Yeah, do you think that's a fountain? Do you think it's a universal globe or something as you drive in?
I don't know. I mean, I think it could be like a sign.
it's just such an odd, like, themed piece.
You're focusing on something in the middle of the road. So I love that.
The other thing that struck me, if you look at the sort of south half of it, just above where the Universal Studios Great Britain logo is, you can see rather large sort of connecting roads between the back areas of it, which I wonder, because they don't often show back areas on any concept art. Like, back areas are often just deleted off concept art entirely. And it made me wonder if perhaps, because the Universal City London Resort was always going to be sound studios and movie studios in the UK as well. And it was quite, it played quite heavily on the tram tour. And it makes me wonder, you know, if perhaps that's maybe back on the cards, because some of those buildings look like potentially big sound studios, especially the ones closest. Do you get what I mean?
Yeah, definitely. It could be, for sure.
I would say don't quote me, but you can quote me all you like. But that's what it seems like. You can certainly see, you know, like the green dome at the back suggests there's going to be, you know, a good proportion of this is going to happen inside. So you've got...
Another thing that someone mentioned, if you go to just behind the hotel, you'll see like these huge tents that I think are just the tents they normally use in Orlando for the Halloween Horror Nights. Mm-hmm. So it's cool that they've you know, used this here, because it just shows you that they're thinking about it. And
I think this is probably placeholder artwork rather than actual artwork.
Oh yeah,
artwork.
For sure. Yeah, this was from an internal PowerPoint presentation about new ventures, international new expansion. So it's just for internal eyes. It got out. They probably didn't want to get this released, because this is just copy paste from other parks and other concept arts. So yeah,
really,
for sure.
They really didn't want this to be...
It's just to give a general idea of what could be built.
Yeah. And I think that's probably, you know, And the story of this is, it's all very conceptual. People are getting very, very excited on something that is probably a wee bit more conceptual than I think they realize. And it could, I think, it could also just be leverage for Port Aventura that, you know, if you don't do it, it's a good deal.
Yeah, I mean, Port Aventura, the price was released. They said it was costing, they wanted to sell it for 1 billion euros, which I think you're getting a lot, but it's still a hefty price tag.
Yeah, but then building your own resort's much more than that.
Yeah, for sure, but they would need to invest a lot in expanding and changing stuff. So, you know, I think that the two resort plan would be a dream for us, you know, for theme park fans and European theme park fans, and would make some very, very appreciated money for Universal and Comcast.
Now, if they do this, let's say there's a two-pronged approach, because let's face it, I mean, everybody's like, will they take on, you know, will they take on Disney for Paris and stuff? And this is a good way to take them on. You get the hotter climate for Spain than Paris, and then you secondly get the accessibility and sort of like the central location and the English sort of language of the UK for a Universal expansion, the UK being the second largest market to Disneyland Paris as well. And I think that is a good strategy to kind of up the ante on Disney if they're trying to take on, you know, the theme park sort of hero.
And I mean, let's not forget, they're literally trapping Disneyland Paris in the middle of their two theme parks. So
in a time that Disneyland Paris, in a time that Disneyland Paris are contemplating their third park.
Yes.
And it's funny that we always see more sort of, it's interesting, and if you listen to this podcast, it's something that you really need to go away and have a look at the dates of, but it's more common than not that when one theme park's getting built, the competitor always builds another. It's very rare that you get, oh, we'll build this, and then 5 years later they built that. No. I mean, MGM Studios for Disney, which is now Hollywood Studios for Disney in Orlando, was built because Universal was opening. Disneyland Paris opened Walt Disney Studios in Europe because it believed in its own success, and secondly, because the rumor was that Universal Studios were opening a park, so Walt Disney Studios opened first. So the idea that they wouldn't compete with each other is so farcical that all we can see in history is when these big players get even a rumor of fighting with each other, the other one responds. So I think you're going to see, it's quite nice because I think Disneyland Paris are suddenly going to have some actual competition and are actually going to have to fight for certain markets, the UK and the European markets.
They really need a big wake-up call because they've been sleeping for 20 years. It's time to wake up and just start building new stuff.
Absolutely.
And I think we'll see that in April. The rumor has it that April should be an interesting month for the Lion King land.
Well, so, it's a new financial year for the Walt Disney Company, so I'd imagine they can start spending money again. And the second thing is that the phasing and the expensive works, so the preparatory works in the ground and sort of the lake and stuff will have ended that financial year, which means the CapEx budget has a bit more you know, money to be spent in Disneyland Paris. While we're on the topic, we have some Disneyland Paris news. Although I don't know if you'd call it news, but I'm going to go through it anyway. We are now under a month. We're now under 30 days before they open the Disneyland Hotel again.
Yeah, that's right.
So we've now seen the menus.
Is it open, really? 25th, okay.
And there's media previews on the 17th.
Okay. So we'll definitely get a new look and slide. Very exciting.
Yeah. The only thing I don't know about the media previews, because it's not inside ears or anything, it's media, like proper media. So, that's probably down to the fact that the Disneyland Hotel is sold to princes and kings and very expensive guests, like, and I don't think they're probably not reading our blogs or listening to this podcast, so I think that I understand that a lot, but there was a lot of, to keep us out, they're charging €9 for a Coca-Cola.
Yeah.
So for a bottle of Coca-Cola, it's €9. So
it better be the best Coca-Cola I've ever had.
Well, the interesting thing is,
I'm gonna go for the €9 Coca-Cola. I'll give you a review.
Well, it was €6.50 before it shut, I think. But for the €6.50, oh, really? It was €6.50. But as long as you bought two drinks when you went in, for your first drink anyway, you got given a little platter that had, if I remember rightly, had peanuts, olives, and it was always prawn cocktail crisps. I remember them being awful. but you got like a little platter of peanuts, olives, and prawn cocktail crisps. So had you ever been to Cafe Fantasia, the bar inside?
Yeah.
So you got a free snack, and sometimes I think when they didn't do the platter, you sometimes got a packet of nuts and berries or something, and you got that free. So I'd imagine the €9 Coca-Cola probably comes with some sort of little nibbles on the side.
Hopefully, because it's €9 for a Coca-Cola.
Yeah, it's
hopefully it does.
Yeah. A lot of people seem convinced that we're not going to be able to go in without a without like a hotel reservation. And while I think that might be true for week one and two, sincerely, they've never gated that before. So I can't imagine that's going to be especially because the span, the Disneyland Hotel is significantly better than the rest of them. And a lot of guests, you can book into the Disneyland Hotel Spa. I mean, it's very expensive. It's like €260, I think it was, for like 3 hours or something. But you could book into the spa separately. So again, they have upcharge events and they have nice restaurants. And Disneyland Paris, despite all their flaws, have never tried to gate access to only hotel guests for any of their restaurants or bars. Like, they've always let you in.
Yeah, and I mean, if you're selling a €9 Coca-Cola, you probably want people to come in and buy it. So it just makes sense to leave the door open for everyone.
I mean, lunatics like you and I are going to go in for a €9 Coca-Cola, whether they tell us we can or we can't.
I'm definitely
going
to try that €9 Coca-Cola.
Yeah. I think that just goes without saying we're going to be doing the €9 Coca-Cola at some point. I don't imagine it's going to be a big. It's not going to be a big seller, I don't think, but we're going to get in there. Yeah. So we've got that. The second thing we've got is I forget the name of it again, and I've even booked to go and see it, but the thing in the sky, the new parade in the sky, what's its name?
The Main Street Sky Parade, I think.
Something like that. Anyway, that up in the sky. Everybody knows what we're on about. The drone show, it looks like the Main Street Electrical Parade. That that launches, that is the 8th of January. We're now under 2 weeks. I'll be there live for the first night. So I'm very excited to see it for the first night, and I've booked like 4 extra nights so that if it gets cancelled on night one, I'll see it the next night.
Just make sure.
Well, I want to video it, but somebody will upload it within about 30 minutes of it finishing. I totally get that. But I'm going to try and do a couple of different angles. I'll try and get it straight on, left, right-hand side, just so you can sort of see the difference in the parade. We'll get a couple of different views off it. Very exciting.
Multi-angle video, I'll wait for that.
So I think we've got that's quite exciting. And then, of course, across in the US, if we go to Orlando first, they've now opened the Moana Garden and the sort of new Epcot soft escape.
Yeah, it has a name. I'm not sure. It's the Garden.
The Journey of Water. The Gardens.
The center of the new Epcot, which was under a lot of fire, but I think it looks so much better than the concrete mall that used to be there. I mean, sure, it doesn't have a water feature in the middle, but I mean, it was so ugly. And it looks like a park, and people are using that in a bad way. Parks are awesome just to chill at. So I'm not sure what they're on about. I
we
love
also
the
have, we also have from January 7th, the US parks are retiring the reservation system.
Yes.
So.
Yes.
Now, it's kind of funny because Disneyland Paris have just integrated into their ticketing system, so I think they've
always late to the party.
Yeah, they've just managed to get it work, so you only have to scan in once.
Hooray!
Well done, Disneyland Paris tech. Late as always. However, it's probably interesting to note that Disneyland Paris, I've said this ages before, it is likely that Disneyland Paris are going to drop that requirement entirely very soon. There's no way they're about to have Universal fighting them on the left and the right, and then they're going to be turning people away. It was never...
Yeah.
This plan was never going to last long. Like, this is
I think we could see it happening phases. Maybe with the two most expensive passes dropped completely, you know, no reservations for those, and then the two... are there four passes or three? I think they're three now, right? Well, either way, the cheaper passes...
Yeah, bronze, silver, and gold.
Yeah, exactly. The cheaper passes will probably have reservations for a bit more than the other.
It doesn't make any sense though, because the lesser passes are blocked out on the busy days anyway.
It's just a perk. So you know, hey, look at this. You can have this.
Even when the reservations weren't available, and I don't think there's been a day now where Disneyland Paris, they were full the other day, but
I think
I'm not
5th, they were completely full.
Yeah, but I think that's probably due to cast levels rather than park levels.
Yeah, because the queues they weren't you know very bad. They were weren't you know walk ins, but the queues weren't bad. So
yeah, this takes us on to something we were discussing the other day. So one of the things I've done for years, in 2013, 2014, I set up a scraper, and basically it loads the app every 5 minutes. It doesn't actually load the app, it loads the Disneyland Paris API, and it goes in and it picks off the queue times. Okay. And so it goes in and it grabs all these queue times and it tells us how busy, you know, each ride is. You have to kind of lie to it a little bit and give it new times and new addresses that you enter from, or otherwise it just returns you the same old gumph. So for years, so I've been tracking this since 2013. And I've now got enough data to kind of look at how busy the parks are. And you notice something. So if we look specifically to before, I'll call them forging the data, okay?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. We can tell specifically there was a spike in 2016. So around 2016, all of a sudden Disneyland Paris got busier or staffed it less or run less. You know, it got busier. The wait times were higher. And we know, for example, that Disneyland Paris hits its peak time before you would expect it to. So the peak times, if you're looking to ride attractions in Disneyland Paris, 11 a.m. is one of the peaks, and then the second one's about 2 p.m. and then 3 p.m. Mm-hmm. Okay?
Okay.
So any time between 11 and 3 is kind of busy. It does drop a little bit between 12 and 2 and then picks back up about 3, but I think that's probably because people are having lunch. But 11 a.m, 2 p.m, 3 p.m, busiest times in Disneyland Paris, it then begins to tail off. 5 p.m. is quite busy. The 5 p.m. hour is quite busy, but I think that's driven by the parade shuts down a lot of the walkways, so a lot of people just jump in a queue. And then after the parade, it basically tails off up until the end of the night, and then miraculously, for whatever reason, at the end of the night, especially if it's an open late night till 11 or 12, the queues mysteriously in the last 45 minutes of the park all seem to double in time. So,
yeah,
I'm pretty sure
they just don't want people to join in, right?
Yeah, they just lie.
So the last 45 minutes, you say?
Yeah, the last 45 minutes, the time's doubled.
Okay. Well,
dear listener, that is just Disneyland Paris lying to you. They do not want you to go home. They do not want you to join a queue. So, given that the fast passes have run out and everything, and the Premier Access season things have run out by that point.
That's something. Do you see a difference with the four fast passes were taken out and now? So the two different systems?
So
is there a big difference?
So the first year it was introduced was 2018, but it wasn't the system we would come to know today. In 2018, you could see a lot of the same things, but the wait times were generally a little bit higher. In 2019, though, and this is a thought that I've been wanting to share, the times in 2023 have been lower than 2022, and the times in 2022 were higher than in 2021. I'm going to discount 2020 entirely because it was COVID and it was, managed.
Yeah.
But if you look specifically just at 2021, 2022, and 2023, so 21, 22, and 23, we're still getting times all the time, okay? Every 5 minutes, every part, every day. And interestingly, they've become straight lines. Not quite straight lines. I don't mean they're the exact same time all the time, because that would indicate there was an error. What I mean is for every attraction that I scrape, the average time in Disneyland Paris is almost a straight line. And you will wait an average of 23 minutes in your day, and I cannot figure out why it isn't, it no longer is busier at 11 a.m, 2 p.m, or 3 p.m. But I know, for example, that if you're in the park, it is. That is still a thing. It's not, that didn't go away. And we can say definitively that at the end of the night, they still put wait times up and you still wait longer.
Yeah.
But there appears to be some sort of formula they use that fake the queue times. Now, I reported on this last time I was in the parks, and I reported on it when I was in Florida, and you'll remember me saying that Rise of the Resistance commonly said it was a 75-minute wait, despite being only a 25-minute wait. And I experienced that 3 times in Florida. You'll get the same. Yeah. The obvious one for you in Disneyland Paris is Web Slingers. So if you go on Web Slingers, it commonly says it's a 45 to 60 minute wait. Yeah?
Yeah, for sure.
Have you ever waited 45 minutes or 60 minutes for Web Slingers? Ever?
I don't think so. I think it may have broken down. I'm not sure. So I waited about that, but like once.
Yeah. How often do you think you normally wait? I reckon you wait about 15, 20 minutes.
Yeah, I'd say a bit more, like 30, 25. Yeah, 25 minutes, maybe. Perhaps.
Flight Force commonly shows times of, 15 to 25 minutes. And yet Flight Force, quite commonly, you can walk straight on.
Oh, yeah, 100%.
Tower of Terror sometimes shows you 1 hour. Tower of Terror is very rarely an hour. Ratatouille often quotes 65 minutes. In fact, I pretty much guarantee any time you look at the app, it says 65 minutes. The actual wait time is probably closer to 20. So, I don't know what they're doing.
They're trying to sell Premier Access.
Well, they are. The Route 66 phenomenally always tells you it's a 15 to 20 minute wait. Route 66 is at most a 10 minute wait on the busiest day.
Not even 10 minutes wait, so.
So, Disneyland Paris seem to have adopted this sort of, the park opens at a 20 minute wait and it shuts at a 20 minute wait, sorry, 23 minute wait, I should say. Yeah, on average. So, I get the feeling that they now massage all the wait times just to kind of decide whether or not, like, they've obviously got a science to when people will buy Premier Access.
Yeah.
And a level that people are happy with. Like, I'm telling you now, I believe the wait times in Disneyland Paris have become a lie.
Yeah, pretty much.
They've given up. No longer. So there's no point in you wearing that red lanyard. It's not going to change anything.
I always like to just time, the time I'm actually in the queue, just to compare it, and it's, I don't think I've, in this year, I've been 4 times to Disneyland Paris for several days. I don't think I've ever the more time in the queue waiting than what the queue time supposedly was. So and it's been like a big difference. I mean, it's like if it's a 45 minute, I probably waited less than, 15 minutes less than what it says. So they definitely have some
it was the same
going
in the,
over there.
It was the same in the US. When I was across in the US, Rise of the Resistance commonly said 65 to 70 minutes, total lie. Mm-hmm. It commonly said Runaway Railway an hour plus, total lie. they've 55 minutes for the Millennium Falcon, total lie. So Disney, I am calling you out because you are lying about your queue times in every resort worldwide right now. So if you're put off by queue times, I must tell you all that you should probably just join the queue anyway, because it's probably a lot better than it seems. This is my confession. I've never bought Premier Access or Genie Plus ever.
Well, I did. Not once. I did buy Genie Plus most of the days I was there, actually, last year. But Premier Access, I think I bought it like once or twice just to test it out. I think that was it. I go pretty frequently to Disneyland Paris, so it doesn't make sense for me to buy it. I think it's more focused for those people who just visit one or maybe 2 days and want to get everything done. So, but yeah, for sure. So they lie about their wait times.
They're liars. So that is the latest in the Disney news. That is the latest in the Universal news. We've gone through Christmas, so I hope you all had a very happy Christmas, and I hope you all have a very prosperous new year. I hope you get to visit lots of nice new theme parks.
Yes.
I don't know if there's anything else we need to cover. You should go and watch Bernardo's videos. He puts a lot of work into them. They're really well done. He's in the Main Street News on YouTube. You should absolutely probably not watch any of my videos, because they get absolutely zero effort put into them. Get flung basically as fast as I can do it. So that's... It is true. It's so true.
Well, I think they're more than fine. I mean, I've used your videos in a couple of my videos for as background, as BGM. So
ages ago, I told Bernardo just to steal any of my videos. This applies to basically anybody online. If you want to steal my videos and use them as background to your videos, or you need some pictures inside parks, feel free, because there's zero chance I'm ever making them into anything more than clips. Zero chance. I mean, how long have you had your channel now?
I think it has been like something like a year and a half, maybe. A little bit more, perhaps. So right. It's been a couple of months.
6,600 subscribers with 83 videos. That is incredible.
Yeah, I'm really proud of that.
Yeah, you've done really well. What have you learned along the way? What sells? What's good? What's doing well for you?
Oh, so big news and big, stuff that people will search for always helps you get your video out there. Mm-hmm. You have to have a really good title and a really good thumbnail. And I don't think my thumbnails are any good ever. Every time I post them, I'm like, I don't like that thumbnail, and I rarely do. But those two things, and a good intro. You really need a good intro to catch people and, catch their attention. And because if you have a good intro, you'll have some views. So that's pretty much my advice. YouTuber advice for everyone.
I mean, just to tell you here, you've had like 115,000 views on Disneyland's impressive expansion plan, Disneyland Forward. That is your number one video. People like hearing about the original Disneyland, apparently.
Yeah.
Which is a shame because many other people cover it, which obviously are much closer to the action. But exactly. you must have done the best job.
I've never been to Disneyland. I've never been to Disneyland, and yeah, my biggest video is about Disneyland. So, you know, it's that.
Well done. I just wanted to plug it a little bit because. You might not know this, folks, but Bernardo lets me upload this onto my channel, probably because I'm talking absolute rubbish most of the time.
I have a playlist on my channel with all the Discord podcast episodes too, so, you know, I kind of have it there.
He lets me post this on my channel, which is really nice, because it makes my channel look somewhat alive. And my channel's not, I'm not a YouTuber in the slightest. I need somewhere to put my top video, you'll enjoy this. My top video is Stitch at Disneyland Paris singing Baby Shark.
Really?
Yeah. 51,000 views of me uploading a 13-minute video of the Stitch live show.
singing. Baby Shark.
Baby Shark. The one that I'm proudest of that does really well, and this one comes up and it gets lots of comments and stuff. I once walked to Val d'Europe from Disneyland Paris, which is something I do every trip that I'm there, and I filmed it on my GoPro.
Oh, yeah. I actually saw that video before I ever did that walk. So yeah. It really helped me out.
Well, it's interesting because the amount of people that like that video. I'm going to do an update because it's actually not even the fastest route anymore. You can now go out via the bus stands Paul Ceremony South.
Yeah.
So, just a spoiler, in January, if you're looking for a very exciting Disneyland Paris video, this is my exclusive to you. I am going to film a different route to get to Val d'Europe.
Let's go. That's what I've been waiting for.
And it's all fake because I'm going to be staying at the Sequoia Lodge, which means that I don't even need to. I'm only doing the walk to film the walk.
For the video.
There you go. A bit of insider news. Now, as I always say, the minute we put this podcast out, some great, huge breaking news will develop because the last time we recorded the podcast and put it out, I said, that's it, I'm quite confident there won't be because it's now Christmas and everything's shut, and then Universal decided to announce a whole bloody theme park.
Yeah. Why not? I mean, so, yeah.
So exciting news. The good news is it's now 8:30. This has been an hour and a half podcast. By the time this goes out, it will not be 8:30. But I tell you what, it is certain, as certain goes, that big news will follow.
Yeah. Well, I'll be here to cover that. So thank you very much.
Thank you very much too, Bernardo. I've been Graham with the DLRP Roundup. I don't even know why I call it that anymore. It needs a new name. and you've been Bernardo with the Main Street News.
We've spoken.
We need to find somebody about our Universal expert, our Bedford Universal expert, Owen, in the Discord server, unfortunately had to work or something. He wasn't around tonight. So if you feel like joining us, we're on Discord. We talk a lot of rubbish and then occasionally some big news comes out. I've got to tell you, the big thing about being on Discord is you get to discuss it in a lot more detail and you get to see lots of different points of view. We allow link sharing. You can share anything you see online. We're as interested as you are, so it's not some sort of, you know, you don't have to stick to the subject. So
it's an open platform. Let's just
have a happy new year when it comes, everybody.
Yes. Happy New Year, everyone.
And goodbye.
Bye-bye.